and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of Africa on this Tuesday, December 3rd, 2024. Some young men and women in Jonglei State Capital, Bor, say they don't use condom for protection against HIV/AIDS.
When I tried to talk to one of them, he told me that, according to the culture, when they use it, the girl might take them as like the boy is taking that girl as a prostitute.
And school officials in Western Equatorial State Capital, Yambio, say the number of school dropouts has reduced among girls.
The pronouncement of free education, it has motivated girls to stay in school, especially in public school.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Many young adults in South Sudan's Jonglei State say they don't use condoms, which health officials say puts them at risk of sexual transmitted diseases, including HIV/AIDS. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Bor.
Dr. Joseph Omuke owns a pharmacy in Bor Town where he sells different types of condoms. He says he rarely makes money from condom sales because of misperceptions about them.
They do fear actually to buy them. It is because of the cultural norms. Because like when I tried to talk to one of them, he told me that, according to the culture, when they use it, the girl might take them as like the boy is taking that girl as a prostitute. The girl might say, so you are taking me like as if I'm a prostitute. Why are you using this much on me?
Aliyar is a 26-year-old resident of Bor Town and says he trusts his girlfriend more than a condom.
I always have intercourse with them, but I've not contracted any sickness. Some other part of the country that I am in, it is impossible to some other cultures to use. Like whenever you are doing it with a lady within your village, it is always used whenever you are going into something like the hotel to do with other girls that you may not know.
Some young women say abstinence is the only way to prevent HIV/AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases. 23-year-old Magdalene Adeng says she will never use a condom.
I've never used condom, actually. Okay, the reason is I don't trust it, okay? Second to that, there's none. Why should I? No, I don't want to use it, actually. So, okay, as Sudanese, okay, sex before marriage, I'm not married. Sex before marriage is fornication, according to my teacher. So, but you engage into sex, that is abomination.
But 29-year-old Maria says prevention is better than cure. She says sexually transmitted diseases know no limit.
I have used a condom one day because I don't want sexual transmitted disease to come to me, like HIV and AIDS and syphilis, also gonorrhea. Those are really dangerous diseases, so that's the reason why I use it. You cannot trust anyone.
Bol Chow, medical director at Bor State Hospital, says condoms are distributed at public facilities in Jonglei State, but few residents take them.
It was very difficult for us to distribute it, or nobody will request for a condom. But whenever you place it at a secure place where nobody will see you, they'll use it. People will take it and they'll use it for their protection. So I will say that the usage is low. It's not the South Sudanese that use it.
Health authorities in South Sudan's Jonglei State have reported a 0.4% decline in HIV/AIDS infections in 2024, compared with a decline of 1.3% in 2023, according to a survey conducted earlier this year. The World Health Organization estimates 160,000 people in South Sudan are living with HIV. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer, reporting from Bor.
Still on HIV and AIDS, Zambia, an education and prevention program known as the Total Control of the Epidemic Project is focused on ending AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. Cathy Short reports from Peter Wuke, Zambia.
Lossie Zulu has been living with HIV/AIDS for 5 years, one of an estimated 1.3 million Zambians living with the disease. But she's getting help from the global NGO Humana People to People program, a project that is working with communities here to fight HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. Zulu got pregnant after testing positive for HIV, but her son is HIV negative. She credits medical interventions that help mothers access life-saving antiretroviral drugs or ARVs to prevent mother-to-child HIV transmission.
I have been living like this for 3 years, almost 4 years. So we go together with my husband to collect our medications. We take PrEP and ARVs together. So I'm very happy we are still together.
Zulu's husband, Joseph Banda, is HIV negative. He takes pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, a medication that reduces infection from HIV, the virus causing AIDS. Zulu and Banda are what is known as a discordant couple, where one partner is HIV negative while the other is HIV positive.
My wife takes antiretrovirals drugs to protect her from transmitting the HIV virus. She has to continue taking this medicine.
Margaret Zulu is a field officer at Development Aid from People to People in Zambia, or DAP, helping clients around the community to ensure that they are consistent in taking their medicines. She says field officers and community health workers visit people living with HIV who fell out of treatment to re-engage them and help them form small HIV treatment adherence support groups known as TRIOs.
This program of TCE, Epidemic Control, has helped people to have knowledge about HIV, about prevention measures, what to do if we have tested negative, what step they can do, or how they can live positive life when we find the discordant gap.
Mwamba Chunda works as an HIV focal point person with the Ministry of Health at Petauke District Hospital, helping HIV positive people adhere to their treatments.
We used to lose a lot of clients on treatment. You know, when you share someone on treatment, within a short period of time, they are lost. But we're engaging the community.
The project involves traditional leaders like village headman Yoram Mwanza to raise awareness in communities about HIV/AIDS prevention and treatment programs run by DAP.
We started going door to door telling those who didn't attend the meetings that DAP has got this very good program and you should benefit from it, because what we are learning is prolonging our lives, good life.
DAP Zambia is implementing the Total Control of the Epidemic Project and Education and Prevention Program. Elisa Sorensen is its managing director.
We are still saying putting people first. And the slogan in the TCE program is that only the people themselves can eliminate themselves from the TB and HIV epidemics.
The UN's bottom-up approach, combined with high-quality health services, aims to make Zambia reach the ambitious goal set by the UN of no new HIV infections, zero AIDS-related deaths, and zero stigma and discrimination by 2030. Cathy Short, VOA News, Petauke, Zambia.
From health matters, we go to education, where school officials in Yambio County of Western Equatoria State say they have noted a significant decrease in school dropout rates among girls. The officials say school feeding programs and cash transfer for school girls have played a positive role in keeping girls in school. For VOA News, Mattia Samuel Timoteo reports from the state capital, Yambio.
Moses Samuel Elikana, a school officer in Yabongo Primary in Yambio Town, says dropouts at his school are lower because of cash transfers by Girls Education South Sudan, an initiative from the Ministry of General Education and Instruction, which is managed by partners like BBC Media Action and Window Trust International.
One of the factors is actually the pronouncement of free education. It has motivated girls to stay in school, especially in public schools. School in which where I teach. The other contributing factor is also we have this school feeding program has made girls to stay in school. That has really motivate especially girls to stay in the class. And the other one is also they have cash payment. So the policy this year was only girls in the class will be paid. Those who were dropped up will not be able to be paid. And this has actually helped girls to stay in the class because as they stay in the class, the aim was also they will gain something at the end of the time.
Owachigeo Daniel is the head teacher of Francophone Secondary School in Yambe Town. He says last year the dropout rate in his school was high compared to this year's rate.
In our school, according to the statistic we are having, last year the dropout rate was high compared to the one of this year because we normally engage the learners to understand themselves better, and this year we also registered dropout, but it is less compared to the one of last year. As a lady, if you're educated, even if you have your family still, you'll not be a dependent. You'll be a responsible woman who can also take care of the family as well.
Cheko Susan, a mother of five who lives in Yambe Town, says she has seen a good number of girls pursue their education.
I think they have get knowledge on all the issues happening. Very many ladies have not conceived this year. There is a drop of girl child marriage compared to those years. Why I'm saying there is a drop, I have been moving around in the market and at the school as well. Things has changed really. Though the issue of the increment in school fees due to the crisis that we all know, the economic crisis, but at least most of ladies has given their self to struggle for their self, not only depending on their parents.
Grace Apollo Musa, the State Minister for General Education and Instruction in Western Equatoria, says girls have taken education seriously this year.
In primary school, we have seen the enrollment this year is increasing, not decreasing. We have a good number of learners who sat for the examination of primary 8. Girls who are 2,046 who sat this year. The increment of this year is about 759, which is better than the one of last year. We do not register the dropout of this year, like girls dropping from schools.
Apollo says 905 girls are writing their senior 4 examinations across Western Equatorial State this year, which she says is a big improvement compared to last year. For VOA News, I am Matias Samuel Timatio, reporting from Yambia, Western Equatorial State.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, election fever is a health problem. Find out more after the break.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Troops of the Nigerian army have recovered 1.2 million liters of stolen crude, destroyed 56 illegal refineries, and arrested 17 suspected oil thieves in the Niger Delta. The acting deputy director of Division 6 Army Public Relations disclosed this in a statement issued in Port Harcourt on Sunday. Timothy Obiezu reports for VOA from Lagos.
A Nigerian military spokesperson Sunday announced the outcome of the latest joint operation by the army and other security agencies between November 25th and December the 1st to halt the theft of crude oil. According to the statement, 17 suspects were arrested, 56 illegal oil bunkering or theft sites were dismantled, and 1.2 million liters of stolen crude was recovered during multiple raids across the Niger Delta. The raids are part of a wider undertaking and renewed efforts to combat oil theft in Nigeria. Energy expert Faith Nwadishi says it is having an impact.
We see that there's been an improvement in production coming from the background of about 2-3 years ago when the Niger Upstream, you know, Commission said that we're losing about 70% of our production. These efforts are beginning to yield some results that we're seeing, but I think that more should be done.
Nigeria is one of Africa's top oil producers, but the country has been struggling to curb rampant oil theft for decades. Corruption, poor regulation, and a lack of effective security measures have played a role. The Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation, NNPC, estimates the country loses around 200,000 barrels of crude oil per day, or about $10 billion annually, to illegal activities, including oil theft and unauthorized refining operations known as bullfire. The term bullfire refers to the explosive sound made when crude oil illegally siphoned from official pipelines is heated in a metal cauldron and then condensed into petroleum products. Oil is a major earner for Nigeria's economy. Authorities say oil theft is harming economic growth. Economist Eze Onyebere says the latest crackdown by authorities is welcome, but that the government must focus on organized criminal networks.
Nigeria's crude oil is stolen in a commercial rate. So the expectation is that this should continue and they should go after the real cabals, the people who are doing it at a very bigger level and not just the smaller men and women in the industry. It's a welcome development, and we need more of it.
Nwadishi says Nigerian authorities need to publicly prosecute and convict suspects arrested for oil theft. She says despite authorities often announcing arrests, the prosecution process is usually shrouded in secrecy, giving rise to allegations of manipulation and corruption.
It's not enough to say you are seizing. Who are the people you are seizing it from? The ones they have seized before, were they prosecuted? What was the outcome of that prosecution? We have not heard about that. So, and sometimes the people that you see are really not the financiers of that process. We have not seen a really big fish, you know, caught on this issue of oil theft. We have not seen the financiers.
In 2022, the Nigerian government awarded a multi-million dollar pipeline surveillance deal to former oil militant Government Ekpomubolo, popularly known as Tompolo. Between last year and 2024, Nigeria's crude oil output increased by 16.7%. Authorities are hoping to make more progress in the months ahead. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
From Abuja, we go to neighboring Ghana, where voters will head to the polls on the 7th of December. Elections in Africa are often marked by high stakes and heightened tensions, which is decidedly unhealthy for voters. Experts in Ghana say campaign activities, voter fatigue, and fear of political tensions and violence can be deadly, Sinanu told reports from Accra, Ghana.
According to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data, ACLED, an independent NGO collecting data on violent conflicts and protests around the world, since 2000, nearly 50% of election-related violence globally has occurred in Africa, exposing citizens to significant health risk. Ghanaian Ministry of Health National Ambulance Service Director of Operations, Foster Ansombrijan, says while violence is a concern, road crashes are the leading health hazard during elections.
Because of the parties moving around, campaigning, some deep into the night, and so the drivers become tired. And so we know driver fatigue also leads to crashes, road traffic crashes. So we've observed that anytime we are in an election, the number of crashes goes up.
According to the National Road Safety Authority, during election years, road crashes in Ghana spiked by approximately 10%, as security resources are often redirected to crowd control and campaign security. Limited road law enforcement during these periods exacerbates the problem. Anson Brijan says another health concern is physical exhaustion and dehydration. Long hours at campaign events and standing in queues to vote can take a toll on citizens.
Some, they don't even eat because they want to go early and then go and cast their votes. So they don't eat. They will stay in the queue for a very longer time. And some become dehydrated. Some also becomes hypoglycemia sets in because they've not eaten. And so some may be faint. Some may even collapse.
Isaac Newman Arthur is a clinical psychologist and spokesperson for the Ghana Psychologist Association. He says beyond physical health, the stress and tension surrounding elections can severely impact mental well-being, especially for individuals with pre-existing conditions.
Depending on whatever happened during the political season, someone may never recover from the impact of whatever they went through, and that can be lifelong.
As Ghana gears up for elections on December 7, 2024, to elect the president and members of parliament, the National Ambulance Service is stepping up its preparedness to address these health risks. Its Emergency Medical Services Supervisor, Daniel Asari, says they are equipped with modern ambulances and trained personnel to help mitigate health hazards.
National Ambulance Service have been able to give basic first aid training to these institutions like the police service, fire service and immigration and prisons. So we did a training program for them so that they will be able to get certain basic first knowledge.
Authorities at Ghana's ambulance service say while elections mark a pivotal moment in democracy, they also bring health challenges, and their goal is to make exercising their democratic rights as safe as possible for all citizens. Sana Anutod, VOA Africa, Accra, Ghana.
From West Africa, we move to the Middle East. In the largest escalation in the Syrian war in years, Syrian rebels have taken considerable ground, including most of Syria's second city, Aleppo, and continue to fight towards the city of Hama. VOA's Heather Murdock reports from Istanbul with Moir. We are Atrash and Ahmad Falaha in Idlib and Aleppo, Syria.
Syrian rebels say they are now fighting in the countryside of Hama after taking villages, towns, and much of Syria's second city, Aleppo, in the largest escalation of the Syrian civil war in several years. Meanwhile, Syrian and Russian airstrikes continue to hit rebel-held territories as Syrian President Bashar al-Assad fortifies the front lines with heavy weaponry and soldiers against forces they call terrorists, according to Syrian state media. For some families, renewed fighting means returning to homes they long ago fled. This is Hanna Bereket, returning home after being displaced for 5 years.
Our house is burnt. There is nothing left but walls and ceiling. But we are happy to be here. I am with my husband and children, and we are happy. Thank God.
The United Nations says the violence has forced thousands of others to flee their homes and disrupted humanitarian assistance in the region. Hundreds of people have been killed, including dozens of civilians. Rebel soldiers launched the offensive last week as key Syrian government allies, Hezbollah, and Russia had become increasingly embroiled in wars with Israel and Ukraine. Rebel fighters say they have been waiting for years to take lands from the government's control. Shamil Al-Hamzi is a soldier with the rebel forces.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala fatah alayna khilal yawmin aw thalath ayyam.
God the Almighty allowed us to take this area in a couple of days. This area that has been controlled by the government for many years. But God the Almighty has now replaced it with us in only a few days.
Inside the city of Aleppo, locals say they hope whoever is in charge next will improve basic living conditions. This woman is a resident of Aleppo. She doesn't want to give her name for fear that government forces will retake the city.
We are oppressed and deprived. If someone wants to travel, the government stops us. It's a very difficult situation. The living conditions are depressing. We don't know where to go. Even the rents are too expensive.
The latest flare-up in this 13-year conflict is further complicating matters in the region and raising the potential for a larger confrontation. Iran has reaffirmed its staunch support for the Assad government, while the United States, in the midst of a transfer of power, is calling for all sides to protect civilian lives and infrastructure in Aleppo and elsewhere. Heather Murdoch in Istanbul with Muawiyah Atrash in Aleppo and Idlib, Syria. VOA News.
That's all from us on this Wednesday, December 3rd, 2024. Don't forget to send us your words of wisdom and we will sample most of them on Wednesdays. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. I repeat, our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We now leave you with Brenda Fassie and the song Ukombochi.
When Mazamin, Ukombochi. When Mazamin, Ukombochi. When Mazamin, Ukombochi. When Mazamin, Ukombochi.
Listening to Brenda Fassie and the song Ukombochi, which is a name for a local drink in South Africa. I must say, if you want to drink, take some water. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Joe Gill, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.